Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the original Dansky, and you are listening to the unknown and unexplained. Now, tonight's topic is something that everyone has heard a story about. Of course, I'm referring to the biggest cover-up. Some people refer to as the biggest cover-up, the June 14th, 1947 crash at Roswell, New Mexico. So, let's do this right, and let's start with the facts. Now, it was on a large piece of property. The day before, there had been a very large storm. The next day, a rancher by the name of Mac Brazel was pushing a herd of sheep as he came across a large debris field. So when he located this debris field, what he did was he called the sheriff's department, who in turn called Roswell Army Airfield. So the military wasn't the first people involved in this. The sheriff's department contacted them. And when the airfield got it, of course, they thought it was just nothing serious. They deployed their intelligence officer, Major Jesse Marcel, to go out to the Brazel Ranch and investigate whatever it was that he was talking about, this debris, this crash of some sort that they were claiming was a UFO or an alien flying saucer. Now, this is when we find the first debris field. The first of two debris fields. In the first debris field, we just have a crater with a lot of debris everywhere. We don't have an actual craft or anything. We just have a crater where something hit the ground and pieces of it. That's the first site. It's important we remember that because there is another site we're going to be talking about later on in the segment. So keep that in mind. Now, Major Marcel immediately determines this stuff is from it's not of Earth origin. It's not of terrestrial origin. It is from another world. And he goes back to his commander, Colonel Blanchard, who is the base commander of Roswell Army Airfield at that time. And he has the public affairs office release that famous front page where it says RAAF, and they're talking about how the Army has possession of a flying saucer. Now, this is really where we see a lot of the discrepancies that the Air Force tries to push off Marcel getting over anxious and everything. But General Ramey calls Colonel Blanchard and basically rips him a new one for releasing this, first of all, but then he has him recant everything, basically taking Blanchard completely out of the loop, and has Marcel flown up to Fort Worth in Texas. He has him leave Roswell Army Airfield and fly up to Fort Worth. And that's when we get that famous picture of him holding the weather balloon. And now, if you want to pull that picture up on Google, if you look in his hands, he's holding a piece of paper. And on that piece of paper is the script that was written for him under that General Ramey had told him what to say, which is basically saying, yes, I made a mistake. It is a weather balloon. It looked weird because of this, this, and that, which they're going to try and tell us, hey, it was a special weather balloon to do this, this, and that. And hey, that's fine. I'm not saying we've never done that. I'm just saying we've never deployed a bunch of soldiers to cordon off an area and then made a bunch of stuff top secret, leaned on people, threatened people to have them keep quiet about a weather balloon. So moving on. Now, during all of that time with Marcel in Fort Worth, we have soldiers on the ground at the debris field picking up all this stuff, investigating, trying to find everything, because they already know they've got something they can't explain. So they got spotter planes, they've got people walking around picking everything up, they got people cordoning off the area, and that's when we find the mother lode, the second site. And now this is the part where the Air Force starts to say, okay, now you're grasping at straws. There wasn't a second site. Folks, there was a second site. There was a second site. And at that second site is where the craft, and that's where the bodies were. That's where they were. Now, most of the people working the first site didn't even know about the second site. So moving on, now we found the second site. That's when things start to get really serious. Marcel is completely taken off of it. He has no idea of any of this going on. When he comes back, they're telling him, don't worry about it, don't ask about it, pretend like it never happened. Which he does. Some of the other stuff we got going on. Now look, people are like, well, Dan, you know, they found, but how can you prove they have bodies? Okay, here's how I can tell you they have bodies. We have the accounts from the person that was working at the mortuary that the airfield called them about getting caskets. Small caskets that could hermetically seal. He remembers because they were asking for multiple caskets and he was curious at how these kids got killed. Now this guy got curious and actually went up to the base, and because they knew him, he got past the guard post. He got onto the base and he explains how it was just completely insane. It was chaos. People were everywhere, locking down everything, soldiers moving everything, heightened security, lots of people in suits, black suits everywhere. Undoubtedly intelligence and Washington officials. And once they figure out he's not supposed to go there, they grab him, they throw him in his car, and they make him leave. So there was something going on. Something happened that put that base on alert. And why would you, I guess if you made something up, okay, but back then, what was this guy? This was an old man. Well, Dan, maybe you wanted to get famous. Maybe he just felt compelled to tell the truth. Now, a lot of people think of Roswell Army Airfield as just this airfield out in the middle of New Mexico. No, 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 no. This place is basically like the NORAD of the Army Air Force here. This is before it was the Air Force. It was the Army Airfield. It was still the Army Air Corps. And it was the only base that had a nuclear stockpile, and it was our strategic nuclear bomber wing. The 509th was our heavy bombardment group, and it was the only base that had the nuclear bomb. The atomic bomb. So, okay, catching up to where we are. So while, now we have all this stuff going on. These soldiers find the second site. Everything is basically boxed up at Roswell, thrown on a plane, and taken to Wright-Patterson Airfield. Wright-Patt in Ohio. I believe it's in Ohio. I'm looking at my notes. I keep getting all around, keep bouncing all around. And the reason it's going to Wright-Patt is because that's where our foreign air that's where our foreign material stuff goes. The Foreign Air Materials Division, or Foreign Materials Division, basically what these guys do is when you have a rogue pilot bring in a MiG or any kind of equipment that is not from us, you take it to them, they basically reverse engineer it. And what that is you have these guys basically take it apart, figure out how they built it, what it does, what can we learn from it, how could we make it better. And all governments have some sort of thing. The Russians, the Chinese, the Koreans, they all have these kind of programs. Ours is located at Wright-Patterson, and back then it was Wright-Patterson Airfield. Now it's a large Air Force base, and it's still the foreign materials, they're still located out of there, so that hasn't changed. And they do a lot of amazing work. And, you know, they did stuff with the Blackbird, so this isn't some other bureaucratic airbase. They have very much state-of-the-art technology there that definitely blurs on the science fiction. So the places that this material is going, this is, if you really did have an incident where you had something you didn't understand from another world, this is exactly where you would send this stuff. Now, Roswell, being the only airfield that has the atomic bomb, you start to think, okay, even today, very often we hear of UFOs coming close, trying to investigate our nuclear weapons. Like, I remember a story of I believe he was a major. He worked in a Minuteman rocket facility, which are those long range rockets that are underground, and they're supposed to be able to open and shoot immediately, and that's retaliatory if the Russians shoot at us. And they're all out there in South Dakota, way out there in the heartland, and basically we get reports all the time of UFOs coming and shutting down the weapon systems, shutting down the control triggers. And so you could argue that the alien craft that basically maybe this terrible storm knocked out of the sky somehow, maybe they were investigating us. June 14th, 1947. Now remember, in 1945, we didn't drop one but two atomic bombs on another people. And we are the only country that's ever done that in the history of the world. No other country has used atomic weapons or anything like that on another people ever since. Neither before or ever since. Maybe they were investigating us. It makes sense. And then right after that, in July, in September of 1947, you have Harry S. Truman sign the National Security Act, which basically says that the United States government has the right to keep secret whatever they determine to be of national security to this country. Anything, excuse me, anything that pertains to the safety and national security of this country, they have the right to make completely classified and charge you with a federal crime if you talk about it. And that became a law in September 1947. That basically was the beginning of the CIA, the later on the NSA. It was... And that's September, June. We're talking about just a month, really. Because he started drafting it in July. Now, and it's around that same time, we get the memorandum from President Harry S. Truman to Secretary of War Forrestal, and we get the Majestic 12. This is the first time we hear about Majestic 12, which is a group of guys made up of the intelligence, defense, and some of the science community. And in the memorandum, I'm looking for it right now, I have it here in my notes. Here we go. Memorandum. Top secret, eyes only, the White House, Washington. That's the header. September 24th, 1947. Memorandum for the Secretary of Defense. Dear Secretary Forrestal, as per our recent conversation on this matter, excuse me, you are hereby authorized to proceed with all due speed and caution upon your undertaking. Hereafter, this matter shall be referred to only as Operation Majestic 12. It continues to be my feeling that any future considerations relative to the ultimate disposition of this matter should rest solely with the office of the president, following appropriate discussions with yourself, Dr. Bush, and the director of Central Intelligence. Now let me read you the guys that are on Majestic 12 right here. Rear Admiral Roscoe H. Hillencoder, the first director of the CIA. Dr. Vannevar Bush chaired the wartime Office of Scientific Research and Development, which is the predecessor of the National Defense Research Committee. James Forrestal, Secretary of the Navy, first Secretary of Defense, replacing the position of Secretary of War. General Nathan Twining, headed Air Materiel Command at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. What did we just talk about? Air Materiel Command, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Air Force Chief of Staff, Chairman of Joint Chiefs. Number 5 out of these 12 guys, General Hoyt Vandenberg, Directed Central Intelligence, Air Force Chief of Staff. General Robert M. Montague, guided missile expert, headed the Nuclear Armed Forces Special Weapons Center. Number 7, Dr. Jerome Hunsaker, aeronautical engineer from MIT, and chaired the NACA, the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics. That was after Dr. Vannevar Bush. Number 8, Rear Admiral Sidney Sawyers, first director of Central Intelligence, predecessor to today's the Central Intelligence Group, which is now the CIA. The first executive secretary of the National Security Council. which is the predecessor to the NSA. Number 9, Gordon Gray, Secretary of the Army, Intelligence and National Security Expert, CIA Psychological Strategy Board. Psychological Strategy Board. Chairman of NSC, National Security Advisor. Now we get into some good stuff. Number 10, Dr. Donald Menzel, astronomer. Astronomer. Graduated Harvard, cryptologist during World War II, security consultant to CIA, NSA. Dr. Detlev Bronk, medical physicist, aviation physiologist. Whoa. Aviation physiologist. National chair of the National Academy of Sciences, the National Research Council, and president of Johns Hopkins and Rockefeller University. And finally, number 12, Dr. Lloyd Berkner, physicist, radio expert, executive secretary of Bush's JRDB. And the JRDB is the Joint Research and Development Board. Some of these guys, like, you hear it in the names. Aviation physiologist, physicist, astronomer. These are definitely the guys that you want asking the questions. Amazing. And they took control of all the information. And then Majestic 12, a lot of people believe the Majestic 12 still control all the information. That's where you get the idea of the Men in Black, which personally I believe the Men in Black is just really a good umbrella term referring to it's all the intelligence agencies working under one directive. And who knows who's giving the orders now? So years later, Jesse Marcel will come out and say, hey, that wasn't a weather balloon. They'll say he's crazy. He was threatened a lot. He received several death threats. And then you have other guys coming out, people that claim they were at the second site, which is how we found out about it. A lot of people think there was only one site. There was two sites. Mac Brazel never saw the second site, which he was later threatened and confessed to his children that he did indeed see something and that it was not a weather balloon, and that was a deathbed confession. You have other men like Philip Corso who claim that they used the stuff from Roswell and they handed it out to other universities like Stanford, Harvard, MIT, Caltech, Northwestern, all kinds of places to examine and reverse engineer not just the military, but the universities where the smartest minds were. And you see people with psychological training on Majestic 12 learning to understand how to deceive huge groups of people. You have to ask yourself, with so much work they put in back then to keep it secret, to continue the secret, maybe nothing happened. But something definitely fell from the sky in Roswell, New Mexico on June 14th, 1947. Something happened. Something fell out of the sky that is not from this world. And you and I will never know, because it is now in the deep hands, the deep, dark grip of the deep state. I guess that's going to do it. Thank you so much for listening to our show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you're safe and you're well, wherever you're hearing this. Our prayers are with you, and whatever you do, don't go into the dark all by yourself. Until then, this is definitely unknown and unexplained. I'm the original Dansky. Take care.